Hey guys, Nelson here with the Southern Mud Podcast. Guys, we have a new guest. It's our GM, our manager down at Southern Mud Sports is actually at a temporary location in Locksley. And sorry about the camera. We had some audio difficulties and everything, so we're having to refilm this at a different location. So like to welcome Kurt Pridmore. He's, man, we've been friends for a long time, and you know, the stars aligned and we had a perfect, you know, need in a certain area. And he can definitely, is definitely filling that need. He is slinging some boats down in South Alabama, let me tell you. I guess we can start, tell them, I guess a little bit how you got into the duck hunting. A lot of people want to know, I mean, everyone remembers their first duck hunt and what got them into it, whether it was a father, an uncle, or whatever. So, and I guess to you, it's you and your brother. Yeah, I'm sure y'all were probably tied at the hip. But yeah, tell everybody a little bit about that and how that transpired.
Yeah, so me and Joe, my brother, we're about 10 years apart, so I got a little bit of a head start on him. But our father played a huge role in kind of getting us into the outdoor, the bug for that, being out in the outdoors. We did a lot of bird hunting growing up. I remember when I was, I don't know, 3 or 4 years old, out in a dove field. I got to be the retriever for several years until I got big enough to shoot myself. And then we're allowed to, you know, kind of do that. But, you know, we went from, you know, shooting a lot of doves to, you know, getting access to a property that had some beaver swamps on it. So shooting wood ducks. Grow up in the Carolinas, so not a lot of mallards, not a lot of big ducks, unless you're, you know, I guess, closer to the coast.
So like, how did y'all hunt over there? Like, tell people, because I've never hunted actually the Carolinas, but like, what does that consist of? I mean, because I know timber, I know coastal and stuff like that, but what exactly, how are y'all hunting them?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, predominantly, you know, in being in the mid towards the middle of the state, I grew up not too far from the Raleigh area. Pretty much, you find a some land that's got a swamp on it that's maybe backed up by a beaver. Get in there, find the beaver with the hut. Usually, is the open area in the flooded trees. Kind of circle the hut, and then just kind of play defend the swamp whenever the sun comes up. So as the wood ducks come pouring in, you know, you find your three. Grew up trying to pick out the green ones, say, even on wood ducks. You know, you're in and out, back home for breakfast. It's a fun time. Quick shoot, very similar to a good dove shoot. So much different than, you know, what you're going to have, you know, hunting, you know, big flooded timber in Arkansas or, the good thing about North Carolina too is we do have a coastal region. So we have a, you know, different flyway out on the coast. And so much bigger water there. You're hunting, you know, big blinds, big spreads, diver ducks, that type of thing. So, you know, kind of growing up where I did, we were not too far from the, you know, wood duck swamp hunting like we have, you know, here in lower Alabama, but also just a couple hours away from being able to go out into the coastal region and shoot some different type of big ducks. You know, you get your widgeon and get a few your gadwalls and a handful of mallards, black ducks, that kind of thing out to the coast.
Oh, and y'all are known for the, just remember, the swans.
Yes, tundra swans.
Big, so, you can, never gone and done that.
You can. It is one of, I think, 4 or 5 states you can draw a tundra swan tag. So, you know, talking about my brother earlier, he did draw one last year. And when it was able to harvest one. So
yeah.
It's on its way to the taxidermist now. We finally found someone down here that had heard of a tundra swan and could get a mold or whatever it is they use for the taxidermy. So it'll be about a year, probably just in time for the new building to open so we can have that sucker hanging from the ceiling in the showroom.
That's
so,
right.
If you've never seen a taxidermy tundra swan, give us about 10, 11 months and come see us.
Or if you need to know where to go and how to get it and how to...
Yeah. Absolutely.
Get your tundra swan. You and your brother can help them out with that, too.
Walk you through the process.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I guess let's tell them, I mean, I remember the first time I met you. You can kind of tell them a little bit about, you know, where we met or when we first saw each other. I never forget I was editing video or photos or whatever or videos, too, when I saw y'all, but then really I realized it was you and Ben, another friend we'll probably have on here, of course. But you can, I guess, tell them about that and how we kind of got introduced.
Yeah, so I guess you and Ben went to high school together, knew each other from, you know, growing up. And when I moved, I worked in the insurance industry for, I don't know, almost 20 years. and kind of moved all over the Southeast. And I did a stop in Huntsville outside of Huntsville for about, I'd say, 2.5-3 years. And I lived next door to Ben. And so Ben and I connected pretty quickly. He was just getting into duck hunting at the time, and I felt I was a pretty confident hunter coming from the Carolinas, only to find out that there's a whole big world of duck hunting out there that we had yet to explore. Once we expanded beyond Swan Creek in Huntsville, we decided we were going to go out to Arkansas and shoot ducks out there. So we got the info on a WMA up in Northeast Arkansas, and started going out there kind of year over year. I think he would get there on a Tuesday before opening weekend.
It's like four days.
4 days early, and then I would get off work. I did it one time there, and then I moved to Michigan. So then I would come down from Michigan. So he'd get there on Tuesday. I'd get off work on Wednesday or Thursday and make the 13-hour drive down from Michigan and meet him at the boat ramp.
He had a whole truck set up. Like his life was this preseason, journey or whatever you want to call it.
So he got a full size Tundra, had a camper top on it. In the back of that thing was a military cot with a sleeping bag topper, a little mattress topper, sleeping bag. He had carpet in there, a little nightstand and a lamp. Like when it popped down, I mean, it had, the sheets and the pillows, and Courtney definitely helped him decorate it.
Yeah.
he was luxury camping in the back of his truck. And there I was in the back seat of my F-150 with my 100-pound lab, trying to at least get a couple hours of sleep each night. But we did that for a couple years. And I remember seeing the Southern Light truck drive by. And when I think the second year we were there, Ben's like, I know that guy. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I was like, I hear they can make really good stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't really know a whole lot about it. I didn't have a boat at the time, so I didn't have any lights or anything like that. But it turns out, I think he reached out to you that summer over Facebook, and y'all kind of reconnected your friendship. And then the next year, I got there early. I was the one. It was my year to get to the ramp first, and so I was there. I think he was on his way in town and called and said, hey, I talked to Nelson. Come over to the house and forget that, sitting in line at the ramp and, racing everybody down the ditch in the morning. So I pulled out a line and that I'd been there, I think, for a day and a half or 2 days. Yep. And everybody behind me was like, what are you doing? You're getting your spot back. I'm like, yeah, I know. So we ended up coming over at the original camp and, we looked at a map of the WMA. We were like, hey, y'all should go try here. So we said, yeah, let's do it. Next day we put in and, we got on them pretty good. And I think it just kind of, snowballed from there. I came back and never left.
Ben and I think it was almost 20 years since graduating that all of a sudden we meet back, and that's real funny as y'all see all this come together, how all this is just going to connect, and it's just, it's beyond our control, I can tell you that. But it's really, really cool. Yeah, I remember, heck, y'all were hardcore just like me, and that's hard to find. I mean, you get your people that come up, and man, when it's good, everyone mm-hmm. loves it. But when duck hunting's hard, I mean, you got to really, really love it to stay after them. And that's one thing. If I learned anything of all the years I've duck hunted in, 25, 26 years, I didn't start as a kid. I mean, I didn't start till I was around 20 years old. So you can't predict any of it.
No.
It does not matter. Like, you can, if I had a dollar for every cold front that I would rush and try to get there and, oh my goodness, this is the hardest freeze and, and then just nothing happens.
Yeah.
It is, and then you have a huge warm up. And I mean, if anything I've learned, man, the freaking warm up and the push back south and the reverse migration, I mean, that's about the most thing I've ever been able to bank on is a dang hot weather, exact opposite of what you think. And it's usually I don't know what it does to them, but they definitely change their mindset. But I remember too, we had a lot of dangerous experiences we have on the river. And
yes.
One thing, we talked about the life jacket earlier in the podcast, like that's something really important to us because kind of funny since then and since that podcast, I have actually witness one of these life jackets in action.
Oh yes.
And it does work. I was testing a boat and the guy wasn't holding on and, you know, accidentally fell out of the boat. But, you know, that thing, it comes on and it doesn't come on, you know, it doesn't explode immediately. You know, it's rain's not going to activate it. It's really cool. But it's going to, if you're knocked out, it is going to explode and you're eventually with the pressure and it's going to, man, when it comes up, I mean, this guy was, he was floating. There mm-hmm. was no way to, no way not to float with that thing. So it was, you know, it was good to see it in action. On the other hand, you know, dumping somebody out of the boat, something that you never want to see, but, you know, happened kind of accident and freak. But, I mean, y'all had a situation that, I mean, heck, it'd have been a lifesaver.
Absolutely.
Luckily it wasn't needed to be a lifesaver, but, I guess tell them a little bit about what happened there. That was life changing.
Yeah, it definitely changed my life and my perception and perspective on you know the whole you know we've been like I said pretty hardcore getting after them year over year and you know you'd run boats real fast in the dark down winding rivers and you know when you're younger you feel you know 10 feet tall and bulletproof and until something happens and so we were hunting and. We'd been talking about props the night before, and Ben had his boat and had an old CA-57 that was nowhere near 12 inches in diameter anymore. And so I had a freshly worked 3-blade that I just had in my boat because I'd had all my props redone at a shop near the house. And I was going to throw this one on there. It usually gets me pretty good speed. So it's like, okay. So, you know, running in that morning, got up a little bit late, and we jumped in the boat and had left and we're making sure we got to the hole we were going to. And then we take off down the river and me and Ben and our two dogs, Abby and Max. And we get to the first turn and he goes to turn and he realizes he's probably going about 7-8 miles an hour faster than he'd been used to going into that turn all week. Couldn't slow down. There was probably about a 3-foot riverbank.
It was ripping. The current had a ton. I mean, it had gone from 2 foot to... I mean, it was probably 8 foot at that point. Yeah. A little bit higher, it wouldn't have been a bad incident because he'd have just gone straight on in the woods.
Right.
But, yeah, it was ripping.
But, yeah, between the new prop and the current ripping behind us, I mean, we were rolling. And, man, we hit that – went to turn and didn't turn and hit that bank, and the boat went straight up nose first in the air. And I was sitting on the front deck facing backwards. Probably not the best way to ride in a boat either when you're going through the woods. Learned from that experience. But I had front hand view of seeing the boat go up. You know, I grabbed a hold of the bow rail, grabbed my dog in one hand, watched Ben flip over the back transom of the boat, wearing waders, no kill switch, no life jacket. As soon as he pops back up, the boat slides back down off the bank, runs right over top of him. Current was ripping. I had no idea where he was going to come up. Max luckily didn't. He was about to fall off the boat. I got him back in and was looking around, and all of a sudden I see Ben come up and take a big gasp of air, and he was just in reach. And I was, I don't know where the strength came from, but I was able to reach around behind, grab his wader straps, and pull him and his waders full of water and slam him in the bottom of the boat. And as we kind of slid back off and we're laying, the boat was, in the water. We didn't sink it. It definitely wasn't a flotation boat, but there was a good 8-9 inches of water in the bottom of the boat. She was sitting low, we were able to idle it back to the ramp and pull the plug and get all the water out of it. But that was probably inches away and any direction of him taking a prop to the face or a skeg to the face or any part of the boat to the head. Get hung up under a log
or just getting knocked out.
Get knocked out and swept down the river. There's trash
and
stuff
no
in the river. Yeah, I mean you're gone.
That's man. That's...
So it's from that point on. We bought our inflatable life jackets. We wear those every time we're running in and out. Make sure we're the first day in when we're running the river, we're taking our time finding the stumps, finding the logs, finding the trees that have fallen over, things that are a little different from the year before. Making sure we make mental notes. I mean, we've come in and there have been trees across and we've marked those on our Onyx and we're coming up and, get almost to that turn. We know to slow down because we have to make some kind of, I won't say evasive maneuver, but sharp turn left or right, to kind of get through safely. So just making sure that we're taking the time to prep, make sure we've got everything we need. Because, as I've gotten older, I mean, I got too much to lose. I got a wife, I got a kid, I got, family. Obviously running a business now and it's, there's just too much out there. To just
Yeah, I can't.
Whole lot of it make it worth it.
Man, I can't tell you how many times I've come, you know, the day before, run the same run, you know, clean river, you come around, that random, you know, 200-year-old falls in, and, I mean, you have no sight distance mm-hmm. around the corner, and then you got a rushing river, so there's no way to stop, and then all of a sudden you're facing a tree. It doesn't take any time. You're sideways in the tree.
Yep.
Within, you know, 3 seconds, your boat's underflipped, mm-hmm. and you're underwater, and you don't, in the pitch black dark, and you don't know. That's why, I mean, these life jackets, in my experience, I've always liked the ones I can't stand, just a, you know, life jacket. The self-inflating is huge to me, but every time I went to use them, they would be exploded. Mm-hmm. All, you know, I guess you could say cheap self-inflated life jacket. Every time. What do I do? Who's going to go spend another $60, $80 to recharge it, whatever? Yeah, yep. You just fold it together, put it on, act like you're wearing a life jacket. These new ones, I mean, I don't care. I wear one every single day I'm in it because it's always going to be, you know, working. It's not going to accidentally deploy until the exact time's needed. So, I mean, over a, you know, year's time of a life jacket deploying, it might be expensive, but you're going to save money with this one not deploying. So it's, to me, it's a game changer to the industry. I mean, when I'm at the boat ramp, man, I tell people, I was like, man, be careful, or, you know, everybody try to help everybody. If you know something's down, make sure everybody you pass, you know, you yep. let them know, because there's a lot of lives lost every year. And I mean, heck, they're looking for any excuse to shut this stuff down and not open it to public because it's too dangerous. And we just all got to be really careful and, you know, make sure we all help, you know, help each other out and look out for each other. And
yeah, exactly. Communicate. We're yeah. on the same team.
Communicate. We're all on the same team, guys. We definitely are. So, I mean, heck, we've had a lot of cool hunts together. Any stick out in your mind?
Yeah. I mean, just one last year, I think, we were hunting and, you know, it'd been slow and, you know, all of a sudden it was on the thaw, and, you know, we'd been talking the day before. I think y'all beat me there. Y'all were the day before, and he said there was a pretty good trickle of ducks, you know, coming off the fields. And that morning, I think the, you know, the whole field got up at one time, and, you know, we looked up over the hole, and there was, I don't know, 1,000, 1,500 mallards flying around, swooping through the hole, quacking. I mean, it was, you know, black.
Oh, I didn't
back
remember.
Dots
yeah.
from horizon to horizon in all four directions.
Yep.
I mean, they were coming in, going out. I mean, I don't even think we shot. I think we just sat there and watched it in awe.
Called,
it was,
yeah.
It just called and just messed with them because it was so many. It was probably the biggest wad. I mean, I've seen some pretty big wads, but that was probably the largest.
Yeah, and that was almost like a statewide thing. I think we were in Arkansas maybe then, but I mean, it was, you know, you start talking to your buddies, oh my gosh, you need to get here, this mm-hmm. or that. And they're like, no, it's the same thing here. Or yeah. it would be like the day after. So it was really cool. I guess it was some kind of migration, but it was a yeah. mass migration of birds moving through. And it was really cool to see and then to hear and communicate with friends and how it progressed through the state or across the country on how these birds were moving. It was really, really, really cool. Yeah. Also, shoot, we had fun youth season this year.
Yeah, youth season.
Got to take the kids up to the camp, and yep. It was exciting for them to, you know, almost reignite that fire in us to where, you know, they're up at, I mean, heck, we could barely sleep before the opening day of thing. We're out there at 2 a.m. at the boat ramp ready mm-hmm. to launch, and kids are up at, I don't even know, 1:30 or something.
Oh, yeah.
And they're just, I mean, it's crazy to watch the videos of how they're just, they are wired, ready to go. And we get out there like it's opening day. And, man, they were so excited. And we get out there and
– yeah, there's nobody out there.
There's nobody
but,
out
there. Yeah, I mean, for it was a big, you know, big weekend there or a big couple of days there because I know it was Wade's first time out there. And he got to kind of see, like, why does Dad like to come out here so much? Oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
And then he had a couple buddies come with him. And, you know, you had your kids there too. And you know, I got to shoot some ducks and, you know, cause several first ducks were, I think, shot that weekend, and got to, you know, ride the four wheelers and, you know, walk in waders and flooded timber for the first time, few of them.
Get wet and all the things they did, yeah.
But, yeah, we rushed out to the hole. We got there, you know, right at 4 o'clock, broke the trees, you know, followed all the rules. And I think about 6 o'clock, we heard the first boat come by.
Yeah.
So yeah, we were definitely there in plenty of time and didn't have a whole lot of pressure, but you know, they got to see the full experience. They were up at, you know, 2 o'clock or whatever time it was, you know, pumped up, ready to go. I know on a school day, you know, getting weighed out of bed is not that easy. So,
right.
Yeah, he was definitely excited.
Yeah, it was, it was something I'll continue to do every single year. Arkansas changed a little bit so the out-of-state people could get 2 days in a row. Mm-hmm. It's been always split for so many years, and it's hard to get a lot of kids into it. And I think that's, you know, that is the most important thing in my eyes now that, you know, I've hunted. I mean, I love calling the ducks. I love, you know, teaching people, watching them. I love shooting them too.
Let me. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But the sport needs to open up to where we're getting more people in it, because I mean that's the most important thing is keeping it alive, keeping the funding. I mean, you know, people, these anti-hunters always crack me up because I mean they've never spent a dime, you know, trying to save an animal or anything right. like that, and I don't even want to put a number on the amount of money I've spent in the hunting industry over my lifetime, but it is insane. So, you know, it's all about, you know, bringing these kids up, everybody working together. You see some new guy at the boat ramp, mm-hmm. man, there's nothing better to see some guy that's traveled 12 hours from South Florida or, you know, 16 hours and is at a boat ramp, has no idea what he's doing. And he, you know, you can go give him a little bit of advice.
Yeah.
I mean, back in the day, man, to learn that place, there was no Google Earth. There was no mm-hmm. anything. We're out there canoeing, kayaking. I mean, it was just – people can't imagine what it took to find one hole or one good spot. And then the chances of somebody not even being there was even rarer. But, you know, just, you know, nowadays everybody can get on Google Earth. They're going to find every hole.
Yeah,
so there is
no secrets.
No. You know, go tell these people, you know, give them a leg up. Go tell them some hole that everyone already knows or
right.
something. Tell them to get there early. Give them some advice. You know, I really would hate to know the true numbers. We'll never know the numbers, but just the people that are dropping out every year mm-hmm. and then how much are coming in. It's a lot fewer people in the duck hunting community than people even realize.
Oh yeah. I mean, look at license sales year over year. They're, you know, falling, you know, not just Arkansas, but across the board from the data that I've seen. And yeah, I mean, if you've got room, you know, take somebody with, there's nothing better. Then I know, like when I brought Joe to Arkansas for the first time, and I was like, all right, if they come in, this is what they're going to do. And I think a, you know, 15-20 pack came through right through the V in the trees where I told him, and, you know, hair on the back of his neck stood up, and, you know, birds started falling everywhere, and he just looked at me with this, you know, like a kid on Christmas morning. I don't even think I shot. I just watched. There's no better feeling than being able to share that with someone, you know, whether it be a family member, someone you're close to, friend, or just, you know, someone who's just as hungry for it as you are at the boat ramp.
Yeah, exactly. So, I guess tell them a little bit about your store and, what you're going to carry and everything, and then we'll wrap this thing up.
Yeah. So, store right now, we're on a little temporary lot. I think we mentioned that earlier, up in Loxley off the Gulf Shores Parkway, 26189 Gulf Shores Parkway in Loxley. Right now we've got just a little under an acre of land, so pretty selective with what we have in stock. But if you want something kind of one-off, we can try to get it. But right now we carry, you know, mostly Havocs. I've got orders of edges that have come through, you know, gator tail motors, you know, an occasional gator tail boat. We've got some Avids on order, mostly 18 Commanders. That seems to be the boat of the year this year. I think we get 3 or 4 calls every day, so
yeah,
we've got those on order. They'll be here, you know, at some point in the future, but right now it's really kind of what we got: MSTCs, DBSTs, edges, Tatsu motors, and a handful of AODs on the lot there too. So me and Joe, you know, he's doing the sales side of things. If you call, he's probably gonna be the one that answers it. I'm gonna be the one out in the carport doing the installs for right now. But we're looking to expand here in the next few months.
And, yeah, we're about to throw a building up.
Got
to
build up and go from there. But yeah, come see us. We'd love to. You know, if you're down in the area or you know, within a couple hours. I know we sell boats to Texas. I had one to go to Texas yesterday. Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, Arkansas. I think. We've gone, and we've only been open since, really running since probably March. You know, we're already kind of being regional and kind of getting into the nationwide.
Cool. So, yeah, guys. So if you are anywhere along the I-10 corridor, along the Gulf Coast or anything, you know, Kurt's going to be your guy for Southern Mud. He can hook you up. He can deliver anywhere across the country, of course. If he's got a boat, go to the website. All that's going to eventually get completely updated, stay update. But want to appreciate y'all for watching the podcast. You'll see a lot more of Kurt. We're going to be doing stuff all over the country, hunting and introducing a lot of new products along the way too. But thank you. Y'all have a great day.